Hey everybody, it's Lady A
and DJ,
and welcome to episode 11 of Money, Romance, and Greed.
MRG.
Yes, thank you guys so much for just really sticking with us, just tuning in every week. Man, love. Mad, crazy love.
Man, right? Love. Man, shout out to our listeners in Ohio, North Carolina, Michigan, California, New York, Idaho, Virginia, Oregon, Florida, Missouri, Colorado, Georgia, Indiana, Texas, Pennsylvania, Washington, Arkansas, and Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Good looking.
Woo! Thank you guys so much. And of course, we cannot forget... And much love to our international listeners Australia, United Kingdom, India, Kenya, Canada, Thailand, and Ireland.
Gracias.
I appreciate
you.
You.
Bottom line.
We appreciate you. And of course, MRG would not be anything without DJ and Lady A. We are a tag team.
And we are nothing without you. How about that?
And we are nothing without our listeners. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thank you guys
for
supporting
us.
We love you guys. Okay. Woo. Now, let's do it, man.
Let's get after it.
And here's the thing, right? Because we just came off a really great bonus content episode. And we talked about... our episode 11, kind of briefly.
Great episode. That was a fun episode.
That was fun.
Can't wait to the next one.
That was a lot of fun. So, true to word, here we are with episode 11. And this is really a very intriguing, yet strange, yet weird, yet I don't even know what other words I can use to describe. Yeah, like lunatic type situation.
Psychopath.
Oh my God. And by the way, you guys, be sure to hit the subscribe button wherever you get your podcast fix. Okay?
Be sure to hit us up.
Hit us up on mrg.podcast1@gmail.com.
Let us know what you think.
Let us know what you think, how we're doing, and let your friends and family members know who are true crime fans. And hey, you know what? Even if they're not true crime fans, they could be true crime fans.
You ain't lying. Send them to the Instagram page. They'll
yes,
love it.
At Greed Romance. Hit us up. Follow us. We appreciate it. And now we're moving
What's
on.
What's our Twitter?
Okay. So the Twitter is the @GreedRomance. So hit us up there. Email us. Let us know how we're doing. We appreciate all of the feedback. Thank you guys so much for everything. And moving on, right?
Moving on. My fault, Lady A. Let's get into it.
All right. So let's get into tonight's story. So
what we doing?
This story is really a very interesting and intriguing story. And I'll have to tell you, DJ, that it was a little bit on the shocker side. I don't think that these stories just come out every other day. Or maybe they do. Who knows, right?
All our stories is great.
All of our stories are great. And all of our stories are just very like, wow, I can't believe this. Because I can't believe that a person, right, could really be driven to murder somebody. But yet it happens all the time.
Yeah, you'd be surprised out there, right? You cut me off in traffic. That's your ass.
Now I done took out my gun and I done shot you.
Pow.
I wasn't a killer before you cut me off.
But don't push me.
But now I am. Now I'm doing 25 at the Upper State Penitentiary
because you
in my neighboring state.
Right.
Exactly.
What a waste of a life.
That's a waste.
Yeah.
Okay? And it's just nothing but heartache and pain for all of those involved. And this is, and the reason why I bring that up is because this is one of those stories. So let's get into it. So on May 5th, 2009, Christopher Coleman contacts his longtime friend and neighbor, former Detective Justin Barlow of the Columbia Police Department, at around 7:10 a.m., indicating that he was on his way home from the gym and he was trying to contact his wife, Sherry Coleman, but was not able to reach her on the phone.
Hold on. So he called his partner 7 a.m. in the morning.
Yes.
He's already coming from the gym.
Early riser.
He can't get in contact with his wife.
Early riser.
That sounds suspect right there.
Well, and here's the thing.
You gonna call me at 7 a.m.?
I'm telling you.
Come on.
Don't call me.
I'm gonna look at my phone. What is Chris? What the fuck you want, bro?
Don't call me.
I'm headed to work.
It better
I'm not
be
even up.
A true
what that is?
Up emergency. Don't put me on your favorite for the speed dial at 7 a.m. Yeah, not happen.
Because I'm not going to answer.
Not going to happen. But anyway. I'm not going to answer your call. And it's weird for you to be calling somebody that early in the morning. That's any damn way.
And that's the point. It's just weird. I mean, smoke screen, signals is going up. All my alarms are flashing.
Right. So,
why
and
do
then,
you want me to call your wife?
And then, thank you.
Call
that's
your own
my
goddamn
thing.
Wife.
That's my thing. You calling me to say to me at 7 o'clock in the morning that you're not able to reach your wife. Weird.
Did they live close or what?
That was his neighbor. It was his
neighbor.
You did say neighbor,
so.
And apparently, there was some form of comfort there for him to be like, oh, well, let me just call Justin. I'm sure you didn't call him Detective Justin. Like, this is my neighbor, so let me just call Justin.
Lady, hey, without even knowing the story, I can about figure out what happened. Ooh. He called his neighbor, go check on his wife next door. The neighbor goes next door, finds the wife dead. Am I right or wrong?
Hey. You could be, and you could be not. Okay? We gonna play this out. We gonna play this out, and we gonna see what happens. Okay. So, Justin then goes over to his home. Now, mind you, Justin may be sleeping. He may have just gotten his cup of coffee. He may be up there with his wife. I don't know, okay? But for whatever reason, Justin does. He gets up, and he goes over to his neighbor's home. Now, Chris... Actually, his hey, wife is not the only person there. His two sons are also there, too. So that could have been a reason why Justin was like, hold on, back up, wait a minute, let me check this. Right? I mean...
Now, whose sons are home now?
So Christopher Coleman calls Justin and Sherry. He says, oh, my God, I can't, you know, Sherry's not answering her phone. But Sherry's not by herself. Sherry has their two sons there, too.
Right, so why wouldn't...
So, maybe that could have been the plight for Justin to be like, oh, wow, let me go ahead and double check this.
I'm going to tell you, boy, real friends.
Real friends. How many of us have?
Real friends.
Okay.
7 a.m. Hey, Sherry, is everything okay? Right. No, I'm dead. Shit.
I've been murdered. Betrayed, okay? So, you know, he goes over to the home. And, of course, you know, Chris... is talking about his whole family when he talks about Sherry. His two sons are also at the house, also sleeping. So Justin's like, well, let me just go ahead and check the perimeter, as cops do. And he finds an open basement window. All of the doors and other windows are locked, but he finds this basement window open. So he goes in. And he says that he gets through this window and he walks in. And the first thing that he smells is like a bunch of like spray paint. And then he actually sees this like these like writings on the wall. And I ain't talking Destiny's Child, okay?
On the wall.
I'm talking straight Marilyn Manson, weird psychopath,
right, that's like a biblical type
weirdness.
Shit.
Yeah, like all over the wall. He's smelling spray paint and he's seeing these writings on the wall. Now let's talk about what some of these writings say. Things like punished. Okay? They will die.
Who's gonna die?
Apparently, Chris and his family.
Damn.
Who writes that on somebody's wall?
Did Chris do that? Did Chris better not do that? You're sick ass. Like, and what gives? What a good like, friend really? Justin is. The front door, you walk around the side of the house, the back of the front. I found an open garage
so
window,
I go
side
in.
Window. Right.
Thank God that Justin is a police officer.
He was a detective, y'all.
He was a detective and a police officer, so he's accustomed to this type of abuse.
He said, shit, I'm your huckleberry. I'll give you a call right back. Let me go.
Exactly. So, I would, because it takes a different kind of individual. Because me, personally, myself, DJ, if a neighbor calls, and I do, and I'm going to tell you, this is probably a 99 to 1% that I would ever do this. But if I was to take that 1% and go into somebody's house and I saw all the shit on the wall, I'm going to turn around and go walk right back out.
Yeah,
I'm not
going to
be like, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to be scared shitless. Like, oh, yeah, shit,
something's
going on.
I'm going to call Chris back like, Chris, you need to call 911.
Immediately. Okay? So this was really, really, really weird. Of course, Justin is a detective, so he continues through the house. And the thing about this whole situation that's really weird is because, like we just talked about, DJ, is why is a grown-ass man making a phone call to another grown-ass man about his family because he's at the gym? And I don't know, this gym must be like 3 hours away, but whatever, he's at the gym and he's saying, well, I'm trying to call Sherry and I ain't able to get in touch with her and da-da-da-da-da. Can you go over to check my house? Normally, that is a red flag.
Yeah.
Then Justin actually does it.
And find a whole bunch of spray paint and dumb shit on the wall.
Dumb shit on the wall. So let's kind of backtrack on that. We're going to do a hard stop here, and we're going to backtrack on that. According to Chris, because we got to give the people the backdrop on why Chris actually called Justin.
We ain't slow, lady. I'm just joking.
None of us are slow. But for all intents and purposes, we have to just be thorough and kind of talk about why Chris would have done this. And so he had been, and I'm talking about Chris, he had been consistently getting emails and letters that were threatening to both him and his family. And this all stemmed from his career. Okay, let's really get into that, right, DJ? This is all about Chris's career. Who is Chris? Well, Chris is head of security for the world-renowned televangelist Joyce Meyer.
Oh, big bodyguard for Joyce Meyer, huh? Big badass bodyguard with the gun,
big,
huh?
Big man, okay?
Yeah,
big man. He's in charge of Joyce Meyer's, her family, and their safety.
Yeah.
I would have to assume that's a big responsibility, although I've never been a bodyguard. I don't know what that's like, but I would have to assume that that's big business.
Just a little bit.
And especially for Joyce Meyer. And for anyone who's like kind of living under a rock here and just does not have any clue who Joyce Meyer is, she is known throughout the world as a leader in the Christian evangelical world. Okay, so what does that mean? That means that she travels from place to place, from world to world, city to city, preaching the word of God.
That means she's Lady God.
Thank you.
No, that ain't blasphemy.
I don't think so. She does things.
She speaks the good word.
She preaches it.
Preach the good word.
And all over the world. If you don't know, Joyce Meyer comes in, Now you know.
And no lie, I really don't feel a lot of preachers. However, Joyce Meyer is like Joyce. The one that, you know, resonated with me.
And I feel like Joyce is one of the authentic ones. So, you know.
So how the hell did she let this miscreant in?
I'm going to tell you this. One of the things that we were able to uncover, and this is through one of the this is through one of the reporters that actually was really kind of intrigued with Joyce Meyer, kind of after this case or before this case or whenever. And her, Joyce Meyer's ministry, makes like $50 to $100 million a year traveling the world, preaching the word of God. I mean, doing what pretty much she does best, right? So we don't know if that could have had something to do with it. Okay.
It did.
And by the way, Joyce Meyer is on any given television show on any given day of the week. And so, you know, that was another reason why Chris's position there was so important, because she, like we said, she's televised. She's all over the world. She's just a huge, huge figure.
See, I hate that, man. She's a good woman with a goddamn psychopath working for her.
Never knew it.
That makes her look bad.
It does. And that's the thing. That's why, okay. Teach your moment.
Watch who you align yourself with.
Thank you. So, moving on. Because Joyce Meyer is this major, major woman, it was not uncommon that not everybody in the world is going to just love Joyce Meyer just because she's preaching the word of God. In some cultures and countries, people just didn't respect the fact that she was a woman preaching the word of God, or they just weren't Christian-like. I don't believe in Christianity, so how can you tell me about God when I don't even believe in Christianity?
Well, if you sit your ass down and listen for a second, damn.
Right. And those people who wouldn't sit their ass down and listen, they were the ones sending the emails, okay? And let's just talk about for a second what some of these emails look like. They would read like, "Tell Joyce to stop preaching the bullshit. If I can't get to Joyce, then I will get to someone close to her. weird. Very, very weird. Who takes the time to write an email like that?
Yeah.
Obviously a very angry, sick, demented person.
Yeah, these people crazy, man.
So a part of Chris's job was really to just kind of rummage through her emails and just make sure that, you know, Joyce never saw this kind of sick, twisted, demented stuff. But
he's going through the hurt
email. Right, and that was a part of his job.
He's going through biblical emails. Come on, man. So that's a part of his job.
Those are sinful emails.
Right, to a biblical woman.
Not quite godlike.
Mm-hmm. You're right. You're right.
To a biblical woman who's God body, and the devil's trying to come in here and destroy it. Mm-hmm. So that was a part of Chris's job. His job is to make sure, A, that he protects her body. Like, literally, he's like, she's at a book signing. He's like the guy right next to her. And her husband. Because let's make no qualms about it. Joyce Meyer brought her husband everywhere that she went. I mean, do you blame the woman? Right? I mean, this is a family affair right here. So, his other part of his job was just to make sure that she never saw these kind of things. But in November of 2008, that's when Chris says that he started receiving emails of this threatening nature. And that was like, well, I'm assuming it's because he's like her right hand to God guy, like the head of security and all of this and everything. So he's receiving these emails. Well, these emails eventually turn into letters being put in his mailbox. And I'm quite sure they're not put by the postman, okay? These are people like walking up and like sticking letters in his mailbox. And let's talk about what some of these sounded like. Fuck you. Deny your God publicly or else. No more opportunities. Time is running out for you and your family.
That's some sick shit.
That's some sick.
I'm not denouncing my God.
Publicly.
Who the hell are you?
Don't forget, publicly.
Man.
What would you want me to do? Get on national TV and be like, okay, I know that I've been preaching the word of God, but now I'm not.
What's the big deal with people and God? God is real.
Every day.
Damn.
All day. And I don't understand, but see, people like this, and this is like sick people, in my opinion, people like this who send things like that, they also believe in God, but they believe in a different type of God.
Yeah, Satan.
Thank you. That's their God. That's their God. Or atheists. And they just angry.
They don't believe in shit.
That's what I'm saying. And I'm feeling like even atheists don't even go to this extreme, do they? Damn.
Maybe they do. Maybe they don't.
Wow. That's crazy. Okay, so moving on. At that point, when Chris started receiving these emails and letters in their mailbox, then the police began this extra patrol, like, around the Coleman family household, like, just kind of doing spot checks to make sure everyone was okay. And so that would be the reason why Chris was so on edge about his wife not answering the phone and why he was calling her repeatedly. So again, circling back around to what we just talked about a couple of minutes ago to give a little bit of background. That is the reason why Chris is like, oh my God, I'm on 10 when it comes to my wife not answering her phone.
My biggest thing is I got it and I absolutely have it. But if you get in death threats, you ain't supposed to have left your wife home by herself anyway.
Thank you. And period. Who the hell...
So I'm still suspicious.
...leaves their wife... And their babies. Well, you know there's a goddamn psychopathic maniac on the loose. So anyway, Justin Barlow is now in the Coleman home and walking up the stairs past all the weird writings on the wall. And that's what we just talked about. When he gets there, he sees three bedrooms. To the right is the master bedroom. And that's where they find 31-year-old Sherry Coleman. In the right bedroom, they find 11-year-old Garrett Coleman, and in the left bedroom, they find 9-year-old Gavin Coleman, all in their bed, but all dead, and the community is absolutely shocked.
He done killed every motherfucking body in the house, huh?
Murderer.
Wow.
Who the hell kills a whole goddamn family?
Wow.
You got to be a cold-hearted son of a bitch to kill your whole family.
Unfortunately, Lady A, being in this business, you know what happens more often than
So, and let's kind of talk about the suburb here, because we talked about Columbia, Illinois. This is a very low-key suburb, okay? It kind of sits right on the teeter of St. Louis, and it's really just a low-key kind of situation. In other words, murders here are really not known. Doesn't happen. Husbands ain't murdering their wives, and wives ain't murdering their husbands, and neither party are murdering their children.
A quaint town. A quaint town, like you always say.
Quaint town. Exactly. So, I mean, it just serves no, it serves great value to understand how the community would be in ultimate shock. Well, Chris finally makes it home from this gym.
Looks who decides to bring his punk ass
who
home.
Decided that they wanted to show the fuck up. Okay. And when he arrives, there's like a swarm of police. The police made it to his house before he did.
Damn, where's his gym at? And keep in mind,
thank you, he was just at the gym.
Where's his gym at?
I'm sorry, but for me, the average gym is about 10, 15 minutes away.
It's that. It's a gym on every damn corner now.
Thank you.
Get your faggot ass off the treadmill and get home.
Thank you. But my thing is, you had enough time to call your neighbor and say, get in touch with my wife. Okay? So, when he gets home, cops are there, CSI analysts are there, everybody's there, but it's his friend, Justin Barlow, and his neighbor, by the way, and they've been neighbors for about 7 or 8 years at this point, and friends. He takes him aside and says, oh my God, dude, like, seriously, your family is all dead.
And what was his response?
Oh.
He lost it?
Chris is just inconsolable.
Oh, okay.
He's physically ill, which anybody would be. Like, you telling me in this moment I just lost my wife and my two sons after some psychopath has been sending me emails.
I know, but it just sounds funny. So you left everybody at the house? You the man? You left everybody at the house unattended to?
It's crazy.
7 a.m. in the morning? Mm. Working out is that important? I mean, working out is... Oh, my goodness. Ain't nobody playing but Chris, obviously.
Thank you. Chris, obviously, to me, didn't take these threats seriously. And even if he did, he was probably, I don't know, thinking, oh, well, I live across the street from a cop, so nobody's going to actually do anything. That's where you're wrong. That's where you're wrong, Chris. So, moving on. Like we talked about, Columbia is a suburb, very quaint, very small, right outside of St. Louis, kind of teeters at Missouri border or whatever. But one of the problems with this is that this crime was so massively huge that they just didn't have the man and the bandwidth to investigate it themselves. In fact, Columbia, Illinois only had two detectives, and one of them was Justin Barlow.
Damn, they only had two detectives.
They only had two. They quickly realized, whoa, this is out of our control. We've got to get other people involved. So they turned to the major case squad of St. Louis, which was headed at that time by Major Jeff Connor. And he brought in about 25 to 30 other police officers to really get into the nook and cranny of what the hell just happened here. Because in this town, we ain't murdering babies and mamas and kids, okay? We're not doing that, okay?
Well, we just did.
But we just did. We got to figure this out. And we got to figure it out quickly. Okay? So, while Chris is over here inconsolable, barely able to hold the water in his stomach, the major case squad is working their magic. They're like, boom. They jump right in. They're like collecting evidence. They're getting search warrants. They want to have conversations. They're talking to neighbors. They're like basically cleaning out the whole house. And they tell Chris, we know you're hurt. We know you're distraught. But we got to get you downtown so we can talk to you and try to figure this damn thing out, right? Like, what the hell just happened here?
And you better, okay. Come on, you better cooperate.
And you better cooperate. So Chris does actually go downtown. And what he tells police initially, and this is actually like, you know, minutes before he actually gets in the car and goes, he said that he actually left and went to the gym at 5:40 a.m.
Wow.
That's hella early.
Wow.
Who that? He must go to bed at like 8 o'clock at night to be up and at the gym at 5:40 the next morning. And I mean, at the gym. That means I had to leave at 5 to get there at 5:40 for an hour workout.
Yeah, nonsense.
Or a little over an hour workout, right? Because he didn't call his neighbor until 7:10. So how long is this workout?
Hella long.
Right.
And something's wrong. Something strange about it, if you ask me, Lady A.
Exactly.
A fucking liar.
Exactly. And so, you know, the thing about this whole situation is that when the police did go through and they interviewed friends, families, neighbors, the whole Sampani and dance, everyone said the same thing about the Coleman family. That they were the perfect couple. They kill me. People kill me saying that.
They do.
They kill me saying, perfect couple.
That's your own opinion. You don't know what the hell goes on behind those closed
doors. Thank you. But everybody says this. The perfect
couple.
He's an
alcoholic and she's a damn stripper.
Thank you.
I don't know.
But when it comes to your barbecue, okay, they're hugging hands, they're kissing, the two kids are just on their best behavior. Thus, you never know what goes on inside anyone's, you know, behind any closed doors. But this is what the neighbors are telling the Major Case Squad. They're saying, you know what? I can't believe that this would happen to a family that's so quaint. You know, they didn't. They were in complete shock. They said that Chris and Sherry had been married for 12 years. And they met when they both served in the military doing a training at the K-9 unit.
That's a hell of a place to meet, ain't it?
Yeah, they both met in the military. And so once they began a family, Sherry was a stay-at-home mom, and Chris, who was the son of a preacher, by the way.
Them preacher kids, PK,
you know they say the preacher kids, the worst kids to be around, okay? Heathenistic.
And they prove us right at time and time again.
Yep. They said that he used his experience in the military and security training to get the job with Joyce Meyer. So that's how he was able to get that job. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So by this time, everyone is on full blast mode. Like, what the hell? We got to know. We're all scared. I mean, like, it is completely to the point where people in this community were like, is my husband gonna try to kill me? Is my wife gonna try to kill me? Like, what's this about? Who does this? And I think that that's really, whenever murders happen in a small town and, you know, small towns are not accustomed to that, the first thing they start doing is looking at each other. Well, I could be looking at a murderer. I could be looking at a murderer. People stop trusting one another. They start looking at y'all funny, sleeping with one eye open, awareness. Especially when a mother and her two children were found dead in their homes with the dad still walking around like, I don't know what happened. So the thing about this is that this was kind of, they were feeling like this was a murder in the making kind of thing. Because Justin Barlow, when we just talked about him, he's a detective. He had actually put a camera in his 5-year-old's bedroom.
What?
And this was a clear shot to the Coleman's home once the Coleman's had received their last letter in the mail on April 27th, 2009. And keep in mind, this would have been 1 week before the murders, okay? And this letter said, stop today or else.
What?
I know your schedule. You can't hide from me forever. I'm always watching. I know when you leave in the morning, and I know when you stay home.
Yeah, see, shit like that I take very, very seriously.
Oh, yeah.
So there's no way that I'll be leaving my wife at 5:40 in the morning to go to the gym. He said it stops today. Come on, man. To me, again, I'm always... obviously somebody's planting this, but it's somebody close, man. Somebody's a sick bastard.
I know when you leave in the morning.
Right, so I'll be looking at my detective neighbor. I would be looking at a family member. I'm telling you, is Chris getting a bad rap?
So the detective said, oh, I'll solve this problem. I'll put a camera because his son's bedroom window faced the Coleman family. You say somebody's stalking you. You say someone's coming to your home. We're going to catch this fucker. I'm going to put a camera in my son's window. It's a direct shot to your house, your mailbox, etc. We're going to catch this asshole.
So what happened?
So nothing ever came up on the video.
But they steady.
Just saying.
But they steady getting letters.
And somehow the killer was able to get into the home. Now, DJ, how the hell does that work? Are you a goddamn ghost? Kryptonite? I don't understand.
I'm out of the left window going to be cracking. You come through it and goddamn it and beat my wife.
But how are you able to do that when I've got a video pointed right at their home? I should be able to see everything.
It had to be Chris.
Man, listen.
Had to be Chris.
He probably wasn't depending on his neighbor to do that, though. That's what I'm thinking.
About 5 minutes.
And I don't even know if the neighbor, we don't even know if Justin even told him that he was putting that video up there. Maybe Justin thought it was Chris.
He probably did tell him.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. So, the thing about this is that the police is like, okay, either we got a magician on our hands or something else is up.
Or Chris did it.
Okay, so because of that and the hate letters and all of this stuff with Joyce Myers and Chris, they're like, okay, let's take a deeper dive into the situation. So they are working the case and the entire community is like,
what happened?
Thank you. You best be coming up with something. Okay? And like I said, they are like totally freaked out at this point. Everybody's looking at everybody. So just hours after the police begins investigating this case, their best lead, and that is really the writings on the wall here. Okay? Death to Coleman family or whatever it said. The police actually tracked down people from across the country who didn't like Joyce Myers. And so at that point, they're actually like, okay, let's go into Joyce Myers' emails. Let's pull these people. Let's take a look at them. Let's get a clear understanding. Where the hell was you? What the hell was you doing?
Yeah.
Where was your family at? Blah, 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 blah. Right? Mm-hmm. And so they tracked these people down. And so, I mean, these people don't decline the fact that they hate Joyce Meyer. They don't even deny the fact that they even sent the email.
You can't.
Right? It's there in your face. But what they do deny is they had anything to do with her head of security's family murder. Now, I'm admitting to everything else.
I mean, they're not going to admit to a murder now. Damn.
Right. So basically, the police said, oh, really? And just like you said, DJ, well, we're not going to take your word for it. We're going to double check that. They did backgrounds. They verified their alibis, all
and
of that stuff.
Squeaky clean.
Squeakier than a damn clean hair shampoo. Okay? Nothing. So at this point, they're like, oh, shit, we have nothing. Let's go back to Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk to Chris. And so the police department, and at this point, this is Detective Barlow, which is his friend and neighbor, and another detective, Detective Bivens, because remember I told you they had a very small police department. But they were very close with Chris because it's a small, quaint town, so they felt comfortable.
You said they only had two cops?
Two detectives.
Oh, two detectives. Okay, I said, damn. They might have closed their
But it wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me because everybody is just non-volatile people, so.
Well, I think there is three people dead, only two detectives.
Thank you. And that's why they said, oh, shit, we got to get St. Louis in here. But they did interview Chris themselves. And when they did this, they did ask Chris. I mean, to sum it all up, they asked Chris, do you know who did this? I mean, we're like going through and we're kind of having these conversations with these people that we have confirmed, have sent threatening emails to Joyce Myers, you know, whatever, whatever. they all pan out as not guilty. Do you know? No, I don't know. I don't even know how they died. You guys never even told me. Okay? And so now, what becomes the typical question? Chris, were you seeing anybody outside of your wife that could have been a contributing factor to, you know, your wife and kids, you know, dying? And of course, you know, Chris is tap dancing around this answer. No, you know, it was just a conversation. It was a friendship. It was everything but the red flag, right? And so then that's when the cops kind of narrow it down and say, listen, would your wife have approved of these conversations, quote unquote, that you were having with these people or people? Oh, so they narrow it down.
The walls is closing in, Chris.
And Chris says, well, what do you mean?
What the fuck I say? They lucky
people
I
didn't. Kill me with that.
Right.
Well, what do you mean?
I'll be a snazzy by a sock collar so quick. God damn it, Chris. You 50 years old, man. Don't fucking play with me.
I don't understand the question.
Yeah, I know you don't. Right, yeah.
Okay, let's bring it down to a level of granularity, right? Chris, were you romantically involved with anybody?
Yes.
No. Chris straight up says, no, I was not romantically involved. But well, then he backtracks and says, wait. I mean, if you want to talk about a verbal relationship with somebody.
What the hell's a verbal relationship? That's what I'm saying. That's only a matter of time until he says yes.
Thank you.
So he said yes, and then what?
So he tap dances around that, and he says, well,
that was
I was
a
talking
yes. To me,
to me that was a yes.
Yeah.
And so he says, well, Tara in Florida, you guys are already going to talk to her or whatever.
Who?
But that was just a girl that I met through my wife when we vacationed in Florida. Well, the interesting thing about this whole dynamic is that Tara is not just a girl that they met when they were vacationing in Florida. His wife, Sherry, knew her from high school. They were best friends. Friends in high school, and they kind of reconnected when they went on this vacation in Florida. But keep in mind, okay, Sherry being the boss that she is, she's married with children now, and she introduces her husband and says, oh my God, Tara, here's my husband. Oh, Chris, and da da da. Which any woman who's proud to be married with a husband, they would introduce their husband to their friend that they've known half their life.
Next thing you know, they shacked up in the back.
Thank
of
you, and not think they're six. Screwing one another, okay, or whatever. So that's when the police said, okay, there's something much bigger going on here, but they don't tell Chris that.
Right.
Chris tries to downplay it and say, no. And get this,
Chris,
DJ. Get this, DJ.
What?
Okay? Sherry's a boss. These people kill me. Tara is a cocktail waitress.
Oh, yeah. You know
they
that.
Always, what is the deal with downgrading yourself? I mean, I look at these women and I look at the men that these women that these men cheat with. And I'm thinking, are you freaking kidding me right now? This is like the less of the less of a less. It's an insult to your wife. Or your husband. Let's be clear here. The knife cuts both ways. Anywho, Sherry was his wife. They met in the military, canine training, military training, blah, blah, blah. She left her job to be a stay-at-home mom to take care of their two sons, cook and clean and take care of Chris. And now all of a sudden, Chris running around with a cocktail waitress.
Cook and clean,
wow.
Take care of Chris.
Wow.
That was a great summary. A great depiction of how shit went down. Wow.
Oh, my God.
But I'm sure the plot thickens.
The
sure
plot
it
thickens.
Better,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. So, when we say Tara in Florida, who we really mean is Tara Lentz. Okay? And like I said, she was a friend of Sherry. In high school, they grew up right. Together. They were best friends. And for whatever reason, Chris took a liking to her.
Yeah.
We're not sure, okay? At this point, and this is really where, again, this is Chris in his interrogation. He's kind of trying to downplay the whole situation. But the major case squad is like mad, stupid, suspicious, okay? And they contact the St. Petersburg, Florida Police Department to follow up on Chris's story, in which that Florida Police Department contacts Tara. And so at this point, I mean, they're thinking, in Florida at least, this is going to be like a 15, 20, no later than 30 minute conversation with Tara. Tara's going to cooperate with Chris said. And now we're really kind of ruled the husband out. Now we're looking for the true killer, right? Negative. Okay? Negative. Tara got up in there and was like, let me tell you what the real is. Okay? And the real is that they were not just friends. They were not just seeing one another. They were in a full-fledged relationship. In fact, when Chris was out here on his job with Joyce Meyer, flying to Hawaii, flying here, flying there, he's paying money for Tara's ass to be right there with him. Meanwhile, Sherry is at home taking care of their two sons. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. That's crazy.
Ain't no wow. You know how it go, unfortunately. Let's get to the meat
and potatoes. And so Tara says, well, I don't know what you're talking about. Me and Chris are in a relationship. Me and Chris are supposed to get married. I have the date right here on the calendar. Chris bought me a laptop. Chris bought me a cell phone. Chris done sent me pictures. I done sent Chris pictures. I don't know what you're talking about. As soon as Chris told me he was getting a divorce on such and such date in December. Or whatever.
Chris done pulled a 187 is what he just did. A triple homicide.
Man, listen, okay? Chris is a man of many shades.
Yeah, you don't want to marry that man.
Chris told me this, and Chris told me that. And so the Florida Police Department was like, oh, hell no.
Did they drop it on her? Did they drop that bomb on her? Oh, yeah, well, he's locked up right now on murder, triple murder.
They didn't say that, but they straight up called the major case squad and was like, yeah, Tara just dropped a bomb on us. She was in her house like, no, you see that calendar right over there? That's the day that me and Chris are going to get married. Damn. Yes, astonishing people.
Damn.
Astonishing.
I wish we had the crickets. Crickets.
So, at this point, the major case squad step in. Yeah, okay,
that's Justin, what you realize.
Detective Justin and all y'all. Okay, off and over there somewhere.
Yeah, we're dealing with a maniac here. A freaking psychopath.
So then they go to Chris and they're like, what the hell, Chris? We just talked to Tara, and that whole bullshit of you just being friends is a lie. How do we know that, Chris? You took her to Hawaii with you. You're paying her car notes. You're paying her bills. You're taking pictures. You're doing this and you're doing that. She said you asked her to marry her, and y'all had a date up on the calendar on when y'all was gonna get married pending your divorce to Sherry. Chris.
Please tell me Chris asked for a lawyer at that point.
Chris did not ask for a
lawyer. Oh, no, Chris. You stupid ass.
Chris did not ask for a lawyer.
In fact, he doubled down. What happened?
He sure did. Oh. He says, well, it's not an affair if you're not having sex. Come on, Chris. Is that your defense?
You know how good he had to...
He said, in my book...
he's a bad liar. Wow, that's the best he could come up with. They had him shook. His mind was all about, yeah, well, but we wasn't actually having sex. Man, shut up.
And he said, when you're having an affair, he said his definition of an affair is when you're living with them and you plan to get married and everything. And it was like, Chris, Tara has a date on her calendar for 3 months from now that says you guys are gonna get married.
Chris, and my thing is, bro, you're not a player if you're lying, man. Come on, man.
And DJ, get this. That credit card's in their name. He opened up credit cards and put her name on the fucking credit card.
Chris, absolutely.
Come on, Chris. And he
killed his babies? I will.
And even despite all of this, the police still couldn't prove that Chris actually committed the murders.
Because the truth is that infidelity does not constitute murder.
But you better believe Chris' ass is in the hot seat.
And they was on his ass like, why don't rise?
Man, listen. Okay? Like, chop suey to chopsticks. For lack of a better term. So now, okay, Chris is under their radar and they are on to him and you just wouldn't believe it. They know pretty much that Chris has killed his family. They just need to prove it at this point. And really the whole sick thing about this is that they understand that his murder, his motive for murdering his family is for his mistress. How horrible can that be? How low can you go? Wow, Chris. Okay. So, once the affair came out in the community, people just, like, did a whole 360 on Chris.
Okay?
They were like,
as quick as they love you, as they quick as they hate you.
And I mean, they hated that fool in every sense of the word hate. Okay? So, let's go back, DJ, and just kind of break down. Because, really, the police are trying to understand what do they have. And what do they need? So let's break down. One, this is what the police have. Basement doors and windows unlocked even though your family has been threatened for the last 6 months.
Thank you. First thing I said.
Yep. Two, the camera from Detective Barlow's house, nobody was ever caught on camera going in or out or even walking to the mailbox outside of the post office.
It's not looking good.
Not looking good. Three, Chris claims he installed cameras, but when police checked the recorder, the VHS video was missing. How convenient.
Exactly. Yep.
This is what we have.
It's over.
This is what we have. This is what we know. But this is all, again,
speculation.
Thank you.
We don't know. We still don't have a smoking gun, y'all.
Exactly. So fast forward that. We're now at the autopsies, okay? Mm-hmm. The autopsy of Cher revealed that she just didn't, like, lay down and, like, okay, go ahead and kill me.
Would you? I'll beat the brakes off that, man. Listen, you've been for the fight of your life.
To the point where
she left scars.
Sherry actually was left with two black eyes and scratches all over. But those scratches also was all over Chris. Okay? So she was like, damn this, Chris. I feel like she knew it was Chris. I feel like she knew that Chris was the one that had attacked them. And that she was not going to let Chris get away with this shit.
She had to have known.
So, of course, Chris's family didn't believe it. His parents, I told you, his father was a pastor. That kind of thing. No. Chris would never do anything like that. That's not Chris. Chris would never do anything like
Chris
that.
Chris did it.
Chris did that shit. And so, one of the things that they had done was they kind of did a process of elimination to place Chris under arrest. Here's the things that should have happened during this break-in that didn't happen.
They know that they can throw your ass in jail, boy. When they got your ass, they got you.
Yep. 2 weeks after the murder, Chris was charged with first-degree murder of his wife and his two sons. And let me tell you, people weren't happy, okay? And the thing about it is that police still believe that these murders stem from his relationship with Tara. He wanted out of his relationship with Sherry. And he wanted out of it to the point where he would just really degrade her. But before that, he would degrade her.
He would
shit all over her, trying to push Sherry to divorce him.
Ding, 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 ding. Learning moment.
Yep.
If someone's pushing you, forcing you, talking down to you to leave, maybe you should leave. Yeah. Ever thought about that?
Yeah.
Damn. But Cheryl would have still been here today had she left.
Yeah, Sherry would still be here. And I'm going to tell you this, though. The thing about it is that one of the things is that Sherry did not believe in divorce. She believed that once you marry somebody, that's it.
So literally to death do us part. Yes. This fool done killed me.
You're going to have to kill me. Damn. If you want me to leave. Because multiple times that, you know, Chris would degrade her. Oh, you're fat. You're ugly. I never wanted to be with you. All of these horrific things that he would say to his wife. And she would tell other people that he was sinning. See, that's the thing. That's the part of the game that nobody counts on. Is that, you know, he's thinking he's going in here telling Sherry this. And Sherry's not telling anybody else. But Sherry is telling her family and closest friends, and she's crying and she's crying out saying he's talking to me this way, and I don't understand why.
Right. And at the end of the day, man, shit, he didn't realize it because he obviously ain't got no game. Yep. He ain't got no game. He walking around here lying and stuff. But yeah, absolutely. If you talking to your woman like that, you notice she's running out there talking to somebody else.
Thank you.
I mean, it just is what it is.
And but every single time he said he wanted a divorce, Sherry told him and anybody who would listen that she would not give it to him.
And that's why I don't understand. She kind of...
It's terrible.
I wish she would have left.
I do too. Because...
Damn on that old school, I'm staying forever. Yep. He told me to leave. If someone tell you to leave, y'all, leave.
Yep. And the thing, but the thing about it is, and I can almost
at least you leave with your life.
Thank you. And your children.
No,
I would have never thought that Chris would have done this. But one of the reasons why Chris wanted Sherry to file for divorce was because he knew that divorcing Sherry would cost him his job, because it would come out in the divorce that he was having this affair. Why? Because Sherry had found out that he was cheating on her with Tara. And so that's why he said, well, I have this $100,000 a year job, and I'm going to lose it. And that means I can't take care of Tara and all of our extravagant lives. Joyce Meyer will fire me if it comes out in this divorce that I am cheating on my wife. And how do we know that? Well, Joyce Meyer was subpoenaed by the court system to come and testify whether or not that would have been true. And she confirmed, yes, if we had found out that Chris was having an affair and cheating on his wife, he would have lost his job. That is not a part of our standard or our policy. The horse has spoken. So that would have substantiated, once again, why Chris had to murder Sherry. And I don't know. I guess he just wanted to live the single life. Why kill your kids?
It's more to it than that. To me, it's that money aspect.
Yeah. Oh, because he would have had to pay Sherry child support. And he didn't want to do that.
And then a third. So, yeah. And at the end of the day, you know what? You never know.
Yeah.
Because to me, that's the most dumbest thing ever. You killed your babies. It was his kids, too.
Yes.
Nothing matters.
Yep.
You killed three people.
Yep. All for some slut.
That worked at Applebee's.
Thank you. Oh, my God. So, you know, as this trial and this whole thing is going on or whatever, like I said, Chris was arrested. They had a trial. This is what the prosecution's belief is. They still contend that Chris, at this point, is still feeding Tara lies. Why? Because he gave her this date and he said, oh, we're going to be married by such and such date. But he never truly, really filed paperwork to divorce himself from Sherry. He never did that. And so, but he kept telling Tara that he did, and that the divorce would be finalized before they got married. So Tara is dumb as a doornail, off believing this, and thus he has no other choice but to strangle everybody and kill them, and then set Justin Barlow up to go and discover the bodies of these innocent victims. Right.
And my thing is, why kill the kids?
I know. Oh, I hate that.
And I hate it. Oh, you know, the first thing me, lady, hey, I see her in there killing the mom, the baby see it. Now you got to kill them too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I hope.
And then put them
like
back
that.
In their beds like they're sleeping.
I hope not.
Because that's how they all were found. Like they're sleeping.
Just in their
yeah,
beds?
They're sleeping, but they're not really sleeping.
Or did he just kill every come through and kill everybody?
He strangled. Then, you have to be a different kind of monster to strangle everybody. You know what kind of force that takes to strangle everybody?
Oh my God.
He's sick. Monster. Monster.
He killed him with his bare hands?
Bare hands.
All three of them. His own kids.
Own kids. Wife of 12 years.
That was some biblical shit.
Crazy.
So I'm going to take you out by the mount. Okay.
That's evil. Yeah. That's evil. That's a scary kind of evil. Like, you can do that.
What was it going on in his mind?
Like, after you killed Sherry, you didn't stop there. You went to baby number one, and then you went to baby number two, and then you drove off to the fucking gym and pretended like you didn't just do that evil. Monster.
Monster.
So, you know, Chris's defense team, they go ahead and they tell every lie in the book, pretty much, to say, no, this was not what you guys think it is. He didn't do it, you know, blah, 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 blah. And keep in mind, Chris spent a lot of money on his defense team, right? Because he thought that they were going to get him off. They really had no real defense. And to top it all off, Tara came and showed up to court and testified against Chris, she was for the prosecution. So really, it don't matter how prominent your defense team is if you swim it upstream. And so Chris never took the stand in his own defense. Smart move. And they ultimately found him
guilty.
Guilty. Okay? And how did they find him guilty? Well, let's talk about the smoking gun. One can of the spray paints that was used in the home was purchased at a hardware store where Chris used his credit card and signed for it. Come
not
on,
smart.
Chris.
Yeah, but again, he's not a player. He's not smart. I mean, he's a square ass motherfucker that killed his wife.
Yep. He was
his
found.
Family.
Thank you. Viciously. Okay? Chris was found guilty on all accounts of murder on May 5th, 2011. This is exactly 2 years to the day that Sherry, Garrett, and Gavin were murdered. Praise be to the higher powers for that one, right?
Absolutely.
And the judge sentenced Coleman to 3 life sentences, but that's only because Illinois was repealing the death penalty.
Real
otherwise,
talk.
His ass would have had to take that walk. Chris still to this day claims that he did not kill his wife. He claims he never proposed to Tara. He claims that an intruder did this. He claims that he loved his wife and they were going through marriage counseling. He claims that, yeah, me and Sherry, she wasn't fulfilling all of my needs.
Yeah, that'll do it every time. But see, y'all, that's why there's jails. He's a sick fucking bastard, a sick individual that has no, like, he shouldn't be out. He should be behind bars. And at the end of the day,
justice will serve. Yep.
He's a monster.
To a monster. And that's sick, DJ. I mean, once again, we have to circle back around. He strangled each one of them
kids
with his bare hands, one by one.
All of this because you couldn't tell your wife. I mean, all of this for your mistress?
Yeah. That's
you had
what
to
it came
kill
down to.
Everybody just to leave your wife?
Yeah.
What a twit.
Exactly. So, I mean, and so for a number of years, the fight continued even after the verdict, where the Coleman family and Sherry's family wanted to rebury her and her 2 sons in the cemetery in Chicago. They eventually won that battle, okay? And they were able to bring them up and rebury them in Chicago, where Sherry and her 2 sons would be closer to her family. Thank God for that. In 2018, or as of 2018, Chris Coleman is appealing his sentence. Okay?
Man, tell your story walking.
Thank you. And you guys, we want to hear from you. What do you think? Why did Chris Coleman really murder his family? All right? Hit us up, mrg.podcast1@gmail.com, or hit us up on Twitter. And until next time,
Yeah.
Peace. Hey, everyone. It's Lady A.
And DJ. Hey, listen. If you want more amazing episodes of Money, Romance, and Greed,
make sure you subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcast fix. And we want to hear from you.
For inquiries, show ideas, or general comments, hit us up at mrg.podcast1@gmail.com. That's mrg.podcast1@gmail.com.